that first step about why are we doing this gets skipped maybe more than you might expect, just maybe because there is a sense of urgency or feeling that someone said we should do it, it's a good idea. So I think taking that moment to step back and get really clear about why we're doing it is so important. I'd say the exploratory data analysis is another one that can get skipped from time to time, just as in the spirit of moving fast. But I think, again, kind of like haste makes waste.
Welcome to the Data Bytes podcast, Lisa. I am so happy that we have this time to chat because you have a very rich background in data science and engineering. Lots of amazing companies you've worked with, from Google to Twitter to Microsoft, and have a lot of experience even working in universities as well. So thank you for taking the time to share your knowledge with us today.
Thank you, Sadie. Yeah, it's great to connect with you. Excited to be here today.
So given your rich experience, everyone seems to have a little bit of a winding path into this field. You have a master's and a bachelor's in applied mathematics. Was this an obvious transition into data science? I mean, on paper, and I'm using air quotes for those who aren't watching the video, on paper, math to data science seems like very logical. But was your journey very linear, or how did you go from your education into the roles that you are at play today?
Yeah, as you mentioned, I was, you know, always interested in math and kind of the analytical problem solving. I was really drawn to those types of fields growing up, physics, chemistry, a lot of the sciences. And in college, I did applied math and did that for my master's as well, and was really interested in taking math and using that to model real world problems. At that point, it was modeling semiconductor growth. Obviously, in the workplace now, we use it to model like user patterns and usage behavior on various products. But there definitely is a connection there. In between, I did actually start, my first job was in product management. I joined Microsoft as a product manager for C# and Visual Basic on Visual Studio, working on the IDE experience. And I was just really motivated by the idea that I was going to work on this user interface that millions of users were going to use to build applications and the impact that those apps were going to have on the world. But I was also really curious about how large corporations work and how they make decisions. And so I think all of those things kind of tie into the job that I have today. When I first joined Microsoft, data science didn't exist as a function. So that actually wasn't an option. But as it was developing, you know, I think I did kind of gravitate back into that space. I was really enjoying the product lifecycle and the customer feedback, but increasingly I was interested in both in addition to the qualitative, the quantitative, and being able to analyze the usage patterns so we could see, you know, what features were helping customers be successful. And so as I saw this function emerging, you know, I think that math background, like I did kind of gravitate into it, that it was definitely really interesting to work on. And it kind of gave away then in a new light to see how corporations make decisions and really to influence those with data, which is really the role, you know, that I have today.
You mentioned that, you know, data science wasn't first a role at Microsoft when you joined. So when it started to emerge, even in the industry or even before Microsoft had it, was this like an aha moment of like, oh, that's me? I think because it's so funny, like we work in fields sometimes before they're even created and labeled as a thing. I just read a recent research paper that came out in July at a university in Japan, did research on listening to music, taking those brainwaves and then outputting music from the brainwaves. And for me, when I read that paper, it's like, oh, this is an aha moment. I've studied music, neuroscience, and data science. It's like all my things finally combined in one. So did you have like that aha moment for you of like, oh man, I was prepared for data science before it even became a thing?
I think what you mentioned definitely rings true. I did find a certain connection to it. Yeah, it was a bit of a journey. We were calling it Experience and Insights at first was the name of the title at Microsoft. And I think, you know, that step that I took through product management still kind of influenced the way that I would approach data science. Like even some of the things that I learned in how to, you know, create a min viable product or do the kind of a lean product development, that kind of influenced how I think about managing a data science project as well, because it's, you know, some of the aspects regarding how you kind of get to know what your customers want and what their real needs are, and then developing a solution, partnering with them along the way so that you can really understand how what you're building is assessing, is meeting those needs, and you better understand the problem as you go through the process as well. So Yeah, definitely kind of gravitated to it. But I think also the steps along the journey, like some people say, careers are written in retrospect. I think in the end, you can kind of see how all those experiences you had kind of lent them to what you do today.
Oh, I love that. I'm definitely going to use that now when careers are written in retrospect. So speaking of managing data science projects, you have a lot of experience, you know, seeing data science projects before they even became quote unquote data science projects. What does the, let's start with the ideal, right? Because I'm sure you've seen a lot of ways that data science projects can go wrong, but let's start with the ideal. Like, what's the ideal data science project lifecycle?
Yeah, I mean, I think it often starts from the overall business goals that you're trying to accomplish for the product. And those are typically, you know, OKRs that you put together as a cross-functional leadership team. And then you work back from that. And I think projects typically get inspired. Either they're things that, you know, stakeholders might raise and request, or they're things that the data science team themselves have identified as an opportunity, as a way that we could develop a data science solution that gets us to that outcome that we've defined. Or we notice a pattern of the types of questions or themes that we're trying to address and have a more systemic solution to bring together. So first, it's that ideation stage, where I think that first step in terms of really understanding what are we trying to accomplish and how will this data science approach, you know, help drive a certain decision or action or yield that business impact is the first one. And then the second one I would say is doing some exploratory data analysis. So getting to know the data before you start building your solution. I find that's a really important step because sometimes, you know, if you dive right in, you might end up, you know, optimizing a user journey that's only affecting 5% of the user base. And I really think really having that broad perspective on the user journeys and broader aspects there help you hone the solution. And then, you know, I think if we kind of go through like maybe the life cycle of a machine learning model, for example, then you would have the feature engineering that's involved, the extraction of data, the pipeline management, and the further modeling and analytics techniques that you'll be applying. Then you'll go through the model evaluation, the training, the testing, and then monitoring and production. And then I think continuing to kind of manage that portfolio over the time, looking, you know, testing, looking for things like model drift, as well as like potential deprecations in the future. I think that was something that we ran into at Microsoft as well, just given the extent of models that we ended up developing. Like at some point in time, actually a sizable amount of your backlog becomes just maintaining models that you already built. And so it's really important, I think, just like features that you put out there, like to step back a time and say, from time to time and say, you know, is there like a deprecation life cycle at some point as well, or consolidation or evolution of what you built?
So there were a lot of points along that journey. At each of those points, are there kind of a decision tree of a go, no go, right? I like that you mentioned the first initial just exploratory data analysis, which is an obvious kind of step of like, is this worth doing, right? But would you say at every point along that journey is a chance to kind of reevaluate and say, is this worth moving forward within the rest of the process?
Yeah, as you mentioned, that first step I would say is definitely a clear go, no go point. And we've used different approaches based on kind of what works in the cultures and different groups. Like in some teams, there would be an intake form or like a project proposal form where it just helped kind of, whether it's from a stakeholder collecting, you know, what they were looking for, or even yourself as you're starting a project, laying out that one pager of the plan, I think can really help clarify the thinking around what you're trying to accomplish. And there's definitely a drop off from that funnel in terms of like things that might have started in your mind of being like a good idea. But then once you go through that process, you quickly realize they're probably not worth pursuing or won't have the impact relative to other things that you have in your backlog. As far as other go, no go, I would say maybe what I see more is just there might be pivots in terms of approaches. Like often at that point, we, you know, we want to do the solution, but there might be some 80-20 approaches where we find that we can get 80% of the impact from 20% of the work. Or there might be, you know, different things you face around data quality, and maybe there's a lot of the data is noisy, and there, you know, different kind of winterizing techniques or other things we can do to get the data in the expected range. Or there might be a more like data platform investment that we need to do to make sure that just the data is collected and logged with higher quality to begin with. And then there might be, you know, different modeling techniques that we try. Maybe we try some that are performing better than others. So I would say like as we go through the process, it's more kind of evolving our approach at that point. And then maybe that after that first kind of go, no go decision.
when you think about the process, is there common steps that you often see get neglected just because people get excited or there's pressure from the business? And if so, which are those like most common steps that just tend to be like, yeah, maybe we'll get to that later, and is really shouldn't be, right? It should be, hey, we need to do our due diligence and make sure we put the priority in this step.
Yeah, I think that first step about why are we doing this gets skipped maybe more than you might expect, just maybe because there is a sense of urgency or feeling that if someone said we should do it, it's a good idea. So I think taking that moment to step back and get really clear about why we're doing it is so important. I'd say the exploratory data analysis is another one that can get skipped from time to time, just as in the spirit of moving fast. But I think, again, kind of like haste makes waste, I think that's one that's worth the time to put in up front. And then, as I mentioned, I think maybe some of that final maintenance is another area that might get neglected as you kind of move to the next project.
Do you think the why often gets skipped just because, you know, we have difficulty communicating with the business and those technically building it, right? So maybe from like the data scientist perspective, it's difficult to really understand that business why, or, you know, who's kind of to blame on the why it gets neglected, right? It is the most fundamental step, but yes, I've seen it time and time again. It's hard to really define that why sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it, I probably wouldn't put it in a blame. I think it's more just kind of the environment and the structure. Sometimes things come in and it's just kind of becomes assumed that that's already been done by somebody. And I think just really empowering the data science team that they are the owners of, you know, we're the owners of our roadmap. We're the owners of the amount of impact that we drive. And so we really need to make those calculated assessments, because if we don't know why we're doing something, then we definitely don't know like the impact that it will have ultimately. And so I think in terms of ourselves staying true to the fact that, you know, we have, there's always limited resources compared to the infinite amount of things that we could do, and ensuring that we're working on and prioritizing the most impactful things requires that, yeah, we have that that sense of, you know, why we're doing things, and ownership that we can prioritize things within our backlog. And so I think that is a fundamental shift also for data scientists to know that they actually shouldn't say yes to everything that comes in. If so, then we're probably not doing our job correctly. So I think, yeah, it's kind of more of an empowerment, I would say.
I love that. Just giving people the empowerment to push back and say no. And also know that sometimes when you push back, really good things come from that, right? You can just push back with some questions and maybe you get so much a deeper why that wouldn't have been there before. So I love
absolutely that. A lot of great learning can come from those clarifications.
Are there any tools that you like to help kind of manage these data science projects? I know we have tons of things from Jira boards, and some people clench a little bit when they hear that, but any tools that you found really helpful in managing data science projects?
Yeah, I mean, I think Jira and Azure DevOps, like work item tracking tools, are some of the common ones, maybe Asana or others that folks have used to track work. I find like the most, the key distinction in order to get from the reaction that you described to really something that's kind of balancing that cost benefit is just striking the right level of granularity. Often the data science projects don't need to be at the most detailed itemized task level. You can do it more at the higher level project, kind of what is the key priority that you're working on in this sprint or this cycle. And that really helps with decreasing the amount of updating costs to as you're moving things along. I just found like back from, again, when I was working more in developer division there, the bugs were more scoped and detailed. They needed to transfer to a lot of different people. It was really important to have more granularity there. But in this case, yeah, I find just kind of increasing the altitude makes it a lot more manageable. And then it's kind of the right altitude even to be able to review the portfolio as well.
Yeah, I think that's helpful for data product managers too, right? So you may have the overall vision. And if you come from like an engineering team, you need to get really specific about how you want some of these things to work. But so much of data science is exploratory. And so giving that the vision, but also the freedom again to the data science team to add their own creativity and problem solving into how that best can be done. In addition to managing data science team, you wrote a really great piece on onboarding a data science team. And I love this piece because
I hadn't read any articles in regards to this, and I read a lot of articles just in regards to employee onboarding in general and how it's so key that, you know, first 3 months of a new hire, and it really predicts a lot in terms of how long someone will stay and last. But no one's written it for a data science team in general. Can you talk a little bit about what caused you to write this article and what were some of your key objectives writing it?
I wrote that article when I was at Microsoft, and that was a big focus that we were having, was an onboarding initiative to help onboard people to the team. And it just seemed like an area that was where there was an opportunity to have a lot of impact. I guess just like users of our product, like you're saying, like that first initial new user experience is, or new employee experience is a really pivotal period for the whole lifetime of that employee or user with analogy. So yeah, it seemed like, you know, as we iterated on it over time, that we seemed to get a pretty good formula and template. And so it seemed like a very transferable topic area that others would be facing within the teams. And those are the types of topics that I usually like to blog about, is something that we've really thought about, worked on within the team, but then something that I can also discuss with other data professionals in the industry and kind of hear feedback and others' ideas and approaches and share that way as well.
So what are the four things that you think are essential when onboarding a data scientist?
Yeah, so the first one I would say is having an onboarding buddy. And that can sometimes even be a set of buddies, like a support network in your new role, but having that defined, and that's something that, you know, usually the manager can identify. So that's great just to have, like, for all the basic questions, feel unblocked. That way the new employee doesn't feel like they're bothering anybody by asking all these questions. It's like somebody's in that defined role. They're there on the Slack channel or whatever communication teams that, you know, that you use, chat within your company, and you can just regularly reach out to them. I think that really saves a lot of cycles as you get up to speed. And then, of course, the manager will also put together onboarding materials. And that, so that should kind of bring you through a process in terms of getting to know the data set, getting to know the tools, getting access to the tools. You try to do that as soon as possible, because sometimes those take a little bit of time. You don't want to be blocked. So getting all the credentialing and security access is something to do very, very quickly. I think another thing is being a sponge. It's a philosophy that's something in the first 90 days book, and something that I really connect with as well. And so that's basically for the first 30 days, your job is just to learn and absorb. And for someone like myself, you have a strong bias for action. It can actually be hard to resist, like wanting to change or do things. You want to go in and like make an impact, but it's actually so much better just to observe and understand. I mean, you can deliver during that time. It's not that you're, it's actually great to learn while you're delivering as well. But you're just not going to want to like make overarching changes, because you don't want to make assumptions before you really understand the full picture. And so while you're being a sponge, I think it's also really important to ask a lot of questions. I think I remember early in my career, sometimes I would find, oh, well, I should first learn enough so that I can then meet with this person and then ask the questions. But I actually learned this from someone on one of my team. He just came in and he asked so many questions. He's like, this is my time to use the new person card. And I've completely adopted that as well. It's so helpful. Just clarifying some of these things early on. And then all of a sudden you understand the terminology in the meetings more, you understand what's being discussed, and you can really dive in and be a lot more effective. And, you know, better to ask those questions in your first 30 days than, you know, 6 months later. So that, and sometimes glossaries can also be really effective internally too, for just acronyms and things like that to debug. And then when you're going through that, being a sponge and asking a lot of questions, I find it's good to just be intentional also about making sure that you're hearing from all the different perspectives. So for example, as I come into a role, like getting to meet my team, for example, is a really important perspective. And, you know, different levels within the team will have different different visibility to how to what's going on as well. And then getting to know my peers, getting to know my stakeholders, key partners, my managers, peers. So just kind of being thoughtful about the time that you're spending with each different group to have a holistic perspective and not kind of be biased towards one or another. A lot of times you'll find that you'll naturally see questions around like, why are things done this way? And those are really interesting to be curious about, because I think sometimes they're done for a good reason and you're just going to learn about it a little bit later as things fill in, or you're going to get more context. And other times they actually are really good questions to be revisited. And so I think those are good to hold on to while you still have it fresh. And then lastly, a couple other things I'll mention is like for onboarding as a data scientist, getting to know the data and the product. So I feel like data scientists should always know the product in terms of the numbers. So how many users do you have? How many events per day? You know, getting to know kind of the landscape in terms of where that adoption is, getting to know the past research that's been done and analyses. So usually there's like a research library you can go and research or watch presentations or things that have been done, getting the tools. And that will help you also become a subject matter expert in the area. And then lastly, I'd say like setting a 30, 60, 90 day goals with your manager and having clear expectations is really important. I found that to be really helpful. I'll write it down and I'll have, you know, maybe 80, 90%, but maybe my manager will add one more thing. And it's really good that I asked the question because otherwise I would have never known that that's what they had in mind for me to be successful at that point. So I think that's a really helpful expectation alignment discussion.
Great suggestions. I can't just double down on the new card or the new employee card as much. It's like you get this one shot, right? And it expires. So use it as much as you can. That's time to ask as many questions as possible. You recently have changed jobs, and so you're probably went through onboarding. But as a director in a senior leadership position, how does this onboarding process change? I'm sure there's still a lot of listening and learning. Any advice for kind of senior leadership through that onboarding process?
Yeah, I mean, I would say like I would continue like many of those themes that I just mentioned there, but maybe as like an individual contributor, then you're going to focus more on, you know, your work, your domain, your team and your partners. But then as an org leader coming in, you're going to want to kind of get to know various aspects of the org and there are different approaches you can use for that. And it kind of depends on the culture within the team as well. But some groups might have more of a culture around like sharing ramp up presentations with the team, which is a nice way to both onboard on the material, but then get to know folks as they're being able to kind of share directly about their work with you. It's also valuable to do things like pizza team meetings. So going to a team meeting that's anyway, the size of a group that could eat a pizza and getting to know folks in smaller groups. I like to set up office hours or a way that I can get to know folks one-on-one. So there's just like a certain times a week when folks can sign up to connect. And then I also like to share like in my first, you know, monthly all hands, you know, about myself, my personal and professional background, my philosophies and approach around data science. So folks kind of understand my vision and perspective for the space, sharing a vision doc for, you know, our space and our role going forward. So I think in all of those activities, as I onboard, then I also get to engage with the team and get feedback on those areas as well. And then maybe finally, like a leader assimilation can be really effective as well. Like a few months in, kind of reflecting back on the team on kind of what do they know about you? What do they wish they knew more about? What is their initial feedback or response? I think that can really be helpful for any blind spots or kind of what you're learning about the culture and team dynamic. And there's typically things like, you know, broader pulse and pulse surveys. So if one of those has occurred recently, you could look at that to get to know some of what's top of mind within the team. Of course, the next one, you could catch up on that too.
Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit more about leader assimilation? I've never heard of this concept. It was just, you know, I love that kind of looking in the rearview mirror too, right? Similar to how we seem to tie it all together. If we look at our career in hindsight, it all seems to then make sense. How do you do this as a leader coming in as well?
Yeah. So typically, like you can have somebody help conduct it with you who's a third party, for example, a people partner, someone from HR. And so they'll gather feedback, like a certain set of questions that they'll be asking folks within your team. Where like the first question might be, what do we know about Lisa? And then you kind of hear like, okay, from all the things that I've shared about personal professional background, my philosophy of data science, other anecdotes along the way, you know, what have I shared that, you know, folks have learned or picked up? And then, you know, the other things I mentioned, you know, what do we want to know more? So what, you know, what are questions that folks have? What are things that they're excited about for the next chapter going forward? What are some concerns or worries that they might have? What are some maybe like start, stop, continue, things that you like that I started, things that you didn't like, things that, you know, proposals, things we should do differently. And so it's just a really helpful way to kind of collect all those inputs. And you can, the person moderating can help collect that anonymously, but then you can have a meeting where you come together as a group to basically like look at a slide where you see all the responses, then you discuss it together. And then the leader can address, oh, okay, there was this area that you wanted to learn more about. Let me share more about it here. And you can address all the different topics that come up.
That's a great suggestion, particularly in those first 90 days, right, to get that initial feedback. I know that can be one of the difficult things in being in a leadership position is if you're doing something wrong, sometimes people don't want to come and tell you to your face, right? Or even if, you know, maybe you have some vocal people in your group to hear the positive things you're doing. So really it just allows more individuals to get their perspective heard.
It's great to be able to like build that safe space for those questions, but it's good to have like anonymous channels as well. One thing that we'll use like anonymous polls as well, like in the different team meetings, also another way to kind of get to know what's top of mind for folks. And then within my staff meeting, you know, just asking folks across their teams, like, what are they hearing from different team members? Another way to just kind of gather pulse across the team. So that might give me ideas and our broader next all hands. What are some topics that I should proactively address because they're top of mind across multiple people?
As we wrap up today, I want to just talk a little bit about kind of the future of where the data science industry is headed. First, did you think we would be at this place of where we are today, where data is everything and AI is taking over the world? Is this a surprise to you? And just in terms of the environment of where we're at in our data science teams, or did you expect this to kind of be, yeah, we're on a good trajectory?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen both like this increase in levels of abstraction. Like that's what we were working on ever since, you know, I mentioned I was working on developer tools. It's what we're always trying to do in technology is like make things easier, automate more. And then in terms of large language models and machine learning, like that, the power of there is just we continue to increase as well and become easier as like new tooling and things become available. With large language models, obviously we had the earlier versions. Visual Studio, for example, has like IntelliCode is built on GPT-2, or a variation of that. And so, you know, there were other large language models, and we had used them for other projects as well, but they weren't, you know, quite as powerful, obviously, until the big aha moment, I would say, at the end of last year. And so while there were like these maybe signs towards this direction, I don't think any of us like, and even the papers being written this way, anyway, it's quite anticipated like the step function impact that this would have. So yeah, I think as you mentioned, it's like just an incredibly exciting time to be a data scientist. I feel very lucky that we're in this field where, you know, love data and like analysis and like the power of these machine learning models, but and can also now work on these products where like the model really is the product. It's like a pretty unique position to be in, to be able to look at the product from so many different dimensions, both in terms of the typical types of data science work that you would do on it around experimentation, growth funnels, user understanding, et cetera. But then also just like working on the product itself, looking at all the different layers of the model stack and the different techniques that we can use around, fine tuning or like looking at reinforcement learning, human feedback, and, you know, all the different approaches that we can use, like quantization, distillation, ways to make the model more efficient. And so there's just all these really technical challenges that I think are like fascinating for the DS team to engage on as well.
So what excites you the most about the future of this field and maybe where we're heading next?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, a number of things that I started mentioning there, but I think just the power of this technology and like the way that it just really feels like we're in an early stage of a new era, and we're going to look back on this time and feel like that was the early days. And so I think the human interaction pattern is still evolving. Like we're still getting to find all these amazing use cases that we can use this for, but that's still a lot of the learning is like sharing prompts or like, did you know you could use it for this? And like integrating that more into our daily life cycle. So I think, yeah, about the power of what this could come, the fact that it's early. And then, as I mentioned, just all the both impactful but interesting like technical challenges that we have to engage on to bring this to life as well.
And last question today, any advice for women in data, women in data science, women in machine learning, you know, as a leader in the field, what's kind of one piece of advice you wish you could tell your younger self?
As I think about like women in technology, maybe in general, I think it's just, you know, getting to, you know, be your subject matter expert in your area, show up and demonstrate that and insert yourself in places. Don't wait for an invitation. Just step up and show ways that you can get involved, make an impact, and engage. I think that that creates some really good momentum and a great cycle.
Well, thank you, Lisa, so much for coming on the show. We'll be sure to add in your social
profile so people can connect with you and follow along with your work. And I highly encourage you to check out some of Lisa's blog posts. They're really great advice for individuals leading data science teams or looking to be a data scientist yourself. So thanks again for coming on the show, and can't wait to hopefully connect with you again here soon. And thanks so much to our listeners. Remember to stay curious and keep learning, and we'll catch you next time on the Data Bites podcast. Bye, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of the Data Bites podcast. If you're looking for more resources to further your data career or find your tribe, we encourage you to become a member at womenindata.org. See you on the other side.